The talk is Realizing a Delusion. I'm going to start off, I think I'm going to define some terms, first of all. I think everybody's here and everybody got involved in this path because, like me, we found the world and our lives to be really unfulfilling, that there always seemed to be something missing. And got to the point where we knew that more of the same stuff, a better job, a bigger, you know, more friends, a bigger house, a nicer car, really is not going to satisfy, ultimately. Maybe like me, you've asked yourself, well, what would satisfy me completely? Like Saddam Hussein, maybe another palace full of virgins, you know, be emperor of the galaxy. Maybe not just one galaxy, but the galactic cluster. I have to be the emperor of the galactic cluster. And I finally asked myself, well, what if I sat on the right hand of God, sat in heaven on the right hand of God, it's just me and God, would that satisfy me? And I thought, no, I don't want to be second banana. I mean, ultimately, I would say, how come I'm not? So I realized that the only thing that would really satisfy me was that I would have to be God, and that would do it. Didn't sound very practical, but at least I'd answered the question, what would really satisfy me? Well, it turns out that, and you've probably heard all these things too, the Buddhist definition of enlightenment. Realization of the ultimate universal truth. And that's the definition I'm going to use today. Enlightenment is realization of the ultimate universal truth. The Vedanta version of that is the omnipresent eternal reality. I am to the realization is that I am the ultimate eternal absolute Brahman, which sounds a lot like I am God. So I began to be interested in the scriptural the writings of the Vedanta, because it sounded like finally there would be, if that was achievable, if enlightenment was possible, that would satisfy me completely. That would be the final liberation. And so I think probably we're all here for that. We're all looking for enlightenment. If we agree that the absolute omnipresent absolute is the ultimate universal truth, if it's omnipresent, what that means is that it is everywhere. And that means if we look into anything, if we look deeply enough into any object, we find that the absolute ultimate reality is at the heart of it. If you look down through, things are what they're made of in essence. If you look at any object, it's made out of molecules. And if you look at the molecules, they're just collections of atoms. And if you look at the atoms, they're subatomic particles bound together. And if you look at the subatomic particles, well, they're made up of sub-subatomic particles. But eventually, you arrive at a point where you've got the smallest particle, and it's not even a particle. I mean, physicists have shown that these things, that the smallest particles they're aware of aren't particles at all. They're kind of somewhere in between wave and particle. And you go beyond that, and there are no particles. There are waves. And if you go into the waves, waves are made up of other waves. If the whole thing disappears into what is not made of something else, and that is the omnipresent, absolute, the being of everything. This being of everything is the omnipresent absolute, is also the being of us. If we look into ourselves, we will eventually find that we are the omnipresent absolute. There simply can't be anything but the omnipresent absolute, because it's It's everywhere. So it's really all there is. So it's really only logical that I am that and you are that and all this is that. So if we understand that, then we're done, right? I mean, we've at least understood the ultimate universal truth or reality. But if we were really done, we could just break now. We could go to lunch, and that'd be the end of it. Like, thank you for coming, and I wouldn't have to stand up here and talk anymore. But it turns out that understanding is different from realizing. That the definition of enlightenment is realizing the ultimate universal truth, not understanding the ultimate universal truth. And the difference between realizing and understanding is that we are already realizing something else. We may have understood that the omnipresent absolute is everywhere, that it's all there is, and that I am that, but we don't realize I am that. I have a friend that I've known since kindergarten, played with on the playground in kindergarten. He and I started meditation 40 years ago together. He was involved in the organization, the TM organization. He has, now he's in his late 60s. He's had quadruple bypass. He's had other surgeries. I'm pretty sure he's aware that his days are pretty well numbered. And I was talking to him, and he said, you know, I understand all that, but I don't realize it. He said, I guess I'll have to realize it in my next life. And I thought, what is the difference? Why does he not realize what he understands? And I know him. And I know that he has been looking for power. He hasn't been looking for truth. He wanted to get something out of self-realization. He wasn't looking for self-realization. He was looking for some idea of enlightenment that he had that was going to give him power. He's been that way all of his life. When I was a kid, I noticed that he was always small. He was a small kid, and he realized that he was smart and that he could be one up on people by knowing more than they did. And I think he got involved in TM and the organization and everything to be one up on people. So, which brings us to what Mike brought up, that what we really need to be looking for is the truth, the ultimate universal truth. If we're not looking for the truth, if we're looking for anything else other than the truth, we'll probably find something other than the truth. So there has to be this commitment to have realization. There has to be a commitment to finding the truth. And that means you can't believe anything you read, and you can't believe what you see, and you can't believe me. You have to find it yourself. This is definitely a do-it-yourself project. In addition to seeking the truth, we have to wake up. This realizing of delusion, like my friend, he doesn't realize that he's the omnipresent absolute, although he understands he's the omnipresent absolute, because he's busy realizing that he's something else. He's his personality. He's the guy that did this and did that and went to this high school and joined the TM organization that did this and did the CD program. He's got this story of him that he is busy realizing. And what I mean by realizing a delusion is that he's not, if he's the omnipresent absolute, his realization that he's something else has got to be a delusion. But to him, it's absolutely real. And to all of us, it's absolutely real that we're something separate from the absolute. The trick to enlightenment is not to become something that we're not already. The trick is to realize what we already are. To do that, we have to not realize what we've already realized. We're busy realizing a delusion. We have to get over that.
What do you mean by realize?
That it is real. that it's one thing to say I am the omnipresent absolute and understand it, and it's another to come to the point where it's that is the reality. It's obvious. There's no question about that. And the idea that I'm something other than that is then seen as a delusion. We come about this delusion fairly innocently, and I think that it has its seed in the way the mind and the senses operate. The senses appear to be looking out from the body. For example, vision. We seem to be looking out through the eyes, and that the world is out there. And conversely, we are in here. We're inside looking out at the world. So this the beginning of separation there is just innocence, just perception. Perception shows us the world is out there, and it's solid, and it's real, and it, by goodness, you know, if you hit me with a bottle, it'll hurt, and I'll have to go get stitches, and it seems absolutely real, and because we're looking out, we feel like we're inside looking out, then I'm real also. I'm really in here. You're really out there. How can you argue with that? I mean, you can see it, right? You can touch it. You can smell it. The senses tell us that that is the reality. Then we have imagination. Now we've imagined, now we feel like we're inside because we have this visual illusion of being inside looking out. Then imagination comes in and socialization comes in and says, well, I'm really in here. This is my body. It's I control it. I'm the thinker. This imaginary person that we seem to be inside. I'm the thinker and the feeler and the doer of action. And if I don't do it, it won't happen. This whole idea, this whole illusion, delusion flowers with the idea that we're separate souls and that we're temporarily inhabiting this body, but it's going to die, so I will leave this body and I will go and I will reincarnate in another body, and I will, like my friend says, I will keep, you know, looking for the truth in one incarnation after another, and if I don't do it in this incarnation, I'll do it in another incarnation. And so we've realized that we're separate and that we are on this quest for enlightenment, although we know that we are already the ultimate, absolute, universal truth, reality, but we've convinced ourselves that we're not, that we're separate, that we're looking for it. So here we are looking for enlightenment. Definition of Webster's third definition of a delusion is believing something to be true which has no basis in reality. I mean, if the enlightened ones historically have said, I am that and you are that and all this is that, and we say, I am separate and I'm in here and I'm looking for it, but I haven't got it yet, one of us is deluded. You know, either they're deluded or we're deluded. And I think we can assume that they're not deluded, so we're deluded. This is a very persistent delusion because we've been told not only by our senses and our imagination, but we've been told by everyone our whole lives that we're separate. Our parents told us. Our parents acted like they were separate, and they told us we were separate, and they treated like we were all separate. And our schools and our friends and the whole society, even our religions, which are supposedly set up to unite us with the absolute, have told us we're separate. And even the Vedanta often talks and Zen talks a lot about the souls, separate souls on this journey, migrating from, you know, from body to body. So even our religions tell us we're separate. So now we're thoroughly convinced, and we're busy convincing ourselves every day, and we're convincing each other every day that we're separate. And You can even we can even go off and live in a hermitage, and we'll still be convincing ourselves daily that we're separate. And I'm here in this hermitage because I'm seeking enlightenment, and I'm on this heroic struggle to discover the truth. You know, in here, looking for the truth out there somewhere. So enlightenment is not becoming something that we're not already. Enlightenment is just realizing what we already have been, what we already are, and we have been. It's a kind of hypnotic suggestion, and like all hypnotic suggestions, it's ultimately self-hypnosis. Nobody hypnotizes somebody else. There's no actual rays of hypnotic power that go out and hypnotize somebody else. We tell them something, and because we're social animals and we want to fit in and we want to please each other, the hypnotizer tells the hypnotee something, and that hypnotee decides he's going to go along with it, whether he consciously decides or not, and he hypnotizes himself. So we have we're in our own thought patterns. We're perpetuating this hypnotic suggestion, this delusion that we're separate. So enlightenment is pretty simple. It's been called a spiritual awakening, and what we're awakening from is a hypnotic sleep. We appear to be in the waking state right now, but we're actually hypnotized, and we're asleep. And it seemed, we call it the waking state, but it's a kind of dream. Again, you know, if we're not realizing I am that, we're realizing something else. We're dreaming. It's a hypnotic suggestion. We're hypnotizing ourselves, but hypnotic suggestions need to be reinforced constantly, or they peter out, they weaken, and they die. They just cease functioning. So hypnotic suggestions need this daily reinforcement. If we could stop the hypnotizing of ourselves, we would wake up. The trouble is it's a very persistent hypnotic suggestion. It's everywhere. We're being hypnotized. We're hypnotizing each other all the time, and we're hypnotizing ourselves all the time. It's in the media. Almost anything you, if once you see it, you can look and see human interactions and see people hypnotizing each other. And if you pay attention to your own thought processes, you're realizing that quite often I began to see early on that I was saying the same things to myself over and over and over again. I began to feel hypnotized once I started paying attention to it. So if we could stop the hypnotizing process for just a moment, we would have a moment of awakening. This experience of not being in the body, not being the doer of action, is not all that uncommon. Sports figures have had this experience. They call it being in the zone. I've heard basketball players talking about it. They get to a point in the game where everything suddenly becomes very quiet, and they're not playing the game anymore. They're running and they're passing the ball and everything, but they're not doing it. Somehow or another, this imaginary I in there who thinks he's controlling the body stopped for a moment. But the game keeps playing, and they're still playing. And not only that, but they're better at it than they ever have been because their reflexes are faster. And the basket gets to be this big, and it's only this high off the ground, and they can't miss. And they can take the ball away from the other guy anytime they want to. And it's... Sports musicians say the same thing. I live with a musician, and he says there are times when he's a jazz musician, and there are times when he's playing on stage and he's improvising and he disappears, and the music just keeps coming out. But he is not doing it. He's not the player of the music. The music plays itself. And they report also feeling a deep stillness and a deep silence, that everything is, although there's a lot of action happening, it's taking place in utter silence and stillness. So what they're experiencing is the cessation of the delusion that the eye is doing stuff, and they're experiencing a state that is called samadhi in the spiritual literature. It's the cessation of the delusion. So they're experiencing a temporary enlightenment. It may last for minutes. It may last for, you know, quite a while. And it's not just musicians and sports figures. Just ordinary people have it. Also, you're riding in a car and taking a drive and looking out the window, and suddenly the world is perfect and everything is got a golden glow, and the eye disappears, and it's a. So this state of awakening, this state of enlightenment isn't uncommon. But then it gets covered over again by hypnotic suggestion, and we get back to our ordinary lives, and we are the doer of action again, and if I don't do it, it's not going to happen, and got to put out 110%, and quitters never win, and winners never quit, and just take on the whole responsibility of being the person who keeps the universe running. But what if we could bring on this zone, what if we could bring on this state of non-doing more than just once every 5 years or once in a lifetime, but bring it on often? If you ask what were the enlightened doing at the moment that they were enlightened? I mean, most of us struggle. We're on this path and we're struggling for enlightenment, and it's difficult. We don't know what to do, and but it's a heroic struggle. I mean, it's the only struggle worth doing, but it's a struggle. And the enlightenment, those who have had realization of the ultimate universal truth and have realized what they really are, struggled also. But they got to a point in their struggle where they finally said, that's it, I can't do it anymore. It happened to Richard Rose. It happens to everybody. They may struggle and struggle and struggle and just wear themselves out, and they finally just can't struggle anymore, and they stop and they surrender. And at the moment that they surrender, they wake up. They are in the zone. They're not the doer anymore. They've given up. And yet the world continues, and everything goes like it did before, only it goes better. All of a sudden, everything's wonderful. Everything's perfect. This is great. What did I do? What did I do to bring this on? I want to do that again. And they get sucked back into the struggle and struggle some more and struggle. Maybe a couple more years go by, and they say, geez, I just can't do it. I give up. I don't want to. I wish I'd never heard about meditation. I just wish this was, I don't care about enlightenment. Just hell with the whole thing. And they give up, and they wake up again. So what would be, it seems to me that quite often we're locked into this thing of struggle and can't give up. But we don't have to struggle for 30 or 40 years and until we finally are so exhausted that we can't struggle anymore. We can actually practice struggling every day. And I guess the jazz musicians are doing that when they improvise. They get to a point where they just really let go of the playing of the music, and it just comes out. So, and there have been, historically, there have been systems devised to enable a person to let go and to surrender on a regular basis, and that's what meditation is all about. The meditative practices have been devised to bring a person to this automatic state of spontaneous, automatic, non-volitional thinking. Meditation means to think.